Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with an early holiday gift to faithful podcast listeners, episode 156. This is the first of a series of podcasts which focus on events that took place during the 2019 Tri-State Grain Growers Convention in Spokane in November. I'm calling episode 156, Pitching Lessons from Life, The Rookie Speaks, about a presentation given on November 15th by Jim Morris, the high school science teacher slash baseball coach who wound up pitching in the major leagues as a result of a bet he made with his student players. There's nothing connected to wheat farming in this episode, but all of us can connect to Morris's desire to pursue his dreams. Certainly, the producers of the film, The Rookie, released in 2002 and starring Dennis Quaid in the role of Morris, felt the uplifting story would resonate with audiences. They were right. It cost $22 million to make and earned more than $80 million. Before we get to this week's episode, let me thank you for listening. But we need more ears! 6 months ago, after I encouraged current listeners to sign up new ones, I saw a spike in listenership, but many listeners didn't subscribe through a podcast app which sends alert to current episodes. As a result, numbers fell as the new crop of listeners fell out of the habit. For the record, research shows it takes an average of 60 repetitions of any activity to make it a habit, which is my way of asking faithful podcast listeners to once again help more farmers, landlords, agribusiness representatives, university scientists and researchers, and government bureaucrats find and subscribe to Wheat All About It. I'm particularly interested in expanding listenership in rural high schools, where I was pleased to find out recently that some students are listening to the podcast. Let's cultivate that seed and find more subscribers among the coming generation of agriculturalists. I didn't think I'd enjoy Morris's speech. Baseball is not my game, and even heartwarming stories have a shelf life. And yet, I got sucked in by his retelling. In fact, I went so far as to watch the movie again. In the opening credits of The Rookie, it says it is based on a true story. But having listened to Morris's eyewitness retelling, I know a lot was left out of the movie. As you'll hear ahead, it was Morris's grandparents who lived in Brownwood, Texas, who helped him overcome a father who was brutal to him physically and psychologically, a relationship he said was sugar-coated in the movie. But on the plus side, the movie did help give me a sense of the community of Big Lake, Texas, where Morris got his first job teaching science and coaching baseball. At the heart of Morris's story is his achievement over adversity as the result of students who pushed him to be his best. Although he played in the minor leagues for several years as a young man, his pitching days came to an end after an operation on his arm that radically altered its muscles and tendons in order to alleviate pain. But then, at 35, in an accomplishment so unlikely that they made a major motion picture about it, he wound up pitching for 2 years in the major leagues. Morris began his hour-long presentation by describing two types of people we encounter every day. This episode has been edited for length.
Today I want to talk about two different types of people, two different groups of people we encounter every single day. And these people are going to decide who it is we become in our lives. First group, I'm going to name a few of these people that have occurred to me and I've encountered and see if they resonate with you in any way. These people are dream killers. They want to see your dreams fail. They've either tried to do something in their lives or they failed at something, and if they can drag you down to where it is they are, they feel better about where it is they are. The first one was my father. If you've seen the movie, you know that my dad and I didn't get along very well. That is actually Disney's G-rated version of our relationship. My dad was physically and verbally abusive, one of the worst human beings I've ever met in my life, but on the opposite of that, he's probably one of the smartest people I've ever seen in my life who totally wasted every bit of talent he had. Instead of going out and living life, he talked about living life. And his saying to me every day of his life was, children are to be seen and not heard, and I heard that every day of my life. So as a kid, I didn't talk. He was in the military. He was big. He was mean. He was scary. And so I didn't talk, ever. Hence, I am one of the biggest introverts that you're ever going to see on a stage talking to a group of people anywhere in the world. And we can live up to or down to expectation. That choice is ours. You're not smart enough. You're not good enough. Why do you even try? You can embarrass yourself and everybody else. Just give up. You'll never make it. You're not good enough. You don't have what it takes. Early in my life, everywhere except on a ball field in between those white lines where I could be the kid I was supposed to be, I learned to live down here. You're not smart, so why study? You're never going to make it, so why even try? But on a ball field, whether it was baseball or football or basketball, I knew I could be good. And so I lived for those moments in the week when for 2 hours at a time, I could be the kid I was supposed to be. So the first dream killer in my life was actually the person who was supposed to support my dreams the most. It was my father. Second one, my high school guidance counselor. When the scores came back from those tests that you take to see what kind of college material you are, the counselor stops me in the hallways with my scores in his hand. He looks at me and goes, Jimmy, what are you going to do with your life? He's got this smirk on his face. Well, I'm 18. Has anybody in here ever been 18? Yeah, you know a lot. And I looked at him and I said, well, I'm playing baseball. Everybody knows that. And he said, son, I hope so. You're too stupid to go to college. Isn't your job to help me? Last I heard from that guy, he no longer worked with kids. He's no longer a counselor. He worked in a movie rental store when they had those. And he was renting the movie about my life to other people. Now, fourth dream killer is a guy who was in charge of not only all of the other coaches in our program, but all of the kids. It happened in Big Lake, Texas, at Reagan County High School. Now, let me just tell you for your own information, if you ever go through Big Lake, Texas, number one, I'm sorry. Number two, there is no lake in Big Lake, Texas. The last dream killer I want to talk about, because I don't like talking about this group, because basically those people suck. If you look back at the reflection staring at you in the mirror, and you're killing your own dreams, that's your fault. If you talk yourself out of putting in the work and the time and the effort to achieve what it is you want, you're your own dream killer. Don't be your own dream killer. So I'm done with that group. I want to talk about the dream makers, the people who want to see us succeed for no other reason than they want to see somebody else go further than what they did. They want to see people achieve their dreams. They want to see people go far. They want to see people make gains in their lives who had no idea that they could do such things. You see, for the first 15 years of my life, I was a military brat, and I moved from north, south, east, and west, all over the country, and my father was a person who ruled our house. But after 15 years, my parents did me the biggest favor that they never knew they did for me. They moved me from Miami, Florida, in their house, to Brownwood, Texas, in my grandparents' house. Now, at first, I thought I was going to get the same old thing. This was my father's parents. They're going to be the same way. Here I go again. I had two rules when I walked into my grandparents' house. If you do it, own it. Own it, get over it, and move on. Number two, tell the truth. If you always tell the truth, you don't have to remember what you said, because the truth is the truth. Man, have we lost that in this country. Those were my two rules. I went from watching people throw things and hit each other to watching two people who never said a cross word to each other. But it's amazing, both of my grandparents grew up with dirt floors in their homes and worked hard for everything they ever had. And for them to look at other people and help other people achieve their dreams was an amazing thing for me, because I thought you could just as easily give in, give up, and move on. My parents never had that problem. They had everything handed to them. My grandfather fought in World War II. He lost his brother there. Came home with a young family. Started a menswear store in Brownwood, Texas. What does menswear have to do with working on a farm? Nothing. Unless you have to work with other people. He knew everybody. And by I mean he knew everybody, that is back when we had three channels and we were the remote control. One day this man walks in the store, he walks up to my grandfather, he hugs him like they've been best friends forever, and I recognize the guy. I'm like, he's on TV. It was Gene Autry. He knew everybody. And Gene Autry had come in from California to buy suits from my grandfather in tiny Brownwood, Texas, population 15,000 people at the time, and just to hang out with him. They always had people over at their house. They knew everybody. They were loved by everybody. They were respected by everybody. And you know what? They did it the right way. They never tore anybody down trying to get to be where it is they were. They were never rich, money-wise. But I'll tell you what, they're both in heaven right now. At 15, I could have gone off the rails. And my grandparents said, not on our watch. I never heard anything ugly. It was always to build each other up, and they were an amazing couple. I would work for my grandfather in summers, and every day he would teach me lessons, and every day I would learn them, and every day I would think, are you ever going to run out of these? He would look at me and he'd go, Jimmy, you're born with your name and you die with your name. What you do with it in between is a legacy you leave behind for everybody else. Son, what type of legacy do you want to leave? Jimmy, it takes a lifetime to build good character. It takes one mistake to destroy everything you've ever worked for. Who are you, son? Jimmy, if you ever make a promise, you live up to that promise no matter what, because at the end of the day, when you pass away, you're going to be remembered for one thing. Did you live by your word? Were you honest? Our football coach hated baseball, so we had no high school baseball team. I'd rather watch grass grow, was his favorite saying to me. So I played summer league baseball. Did really well. We played 10 games a summer. If you win, you play a couple more and you go to the playoffs. One night, after my dad had retired and he'd moved back to Brownwood, he's at a game I'm at. I strike out 17 people. I hit 3 home runs. I strike out the 4th time up, and he's berating me after the game. All he can do is cuss me out about how I struck out, and I'll never make it. You can't make it in this game by striking out. Behind him was a man that until this day, I still don't know how he could talk. He had a cigar in one side of his mouth, a chew of tobacco in the other, and a dip in his front lip. And I am fairly certain the Surgeon General has a poster of him in his office. His name was Jack Allen. He was a baseball coach at Ranger Junior College, and he wanted to talk to me. He said, I know about your dream. I'm going to give you a scholarship. I'm going to get you classes that you can pass because your grades suck. Well, that was important. You play baseball for me, you go to classes, but on the weekends, you go home and you spend time with your grandparents in the hospital. Which just reassured me my grandparents actually did know everybody on the planet. So in the fall of 1982, I went to Ranger Junior College, where until a few years ago on I-20, if you drove through Ranger, there was a billboard there. It had a billboard announcing the sign of Ranger College. It said, Ranger College, Reading, Writing, and Rodeo. That's where I went to school. And basket weaving was tough at first, but I got the hang of it. I would go to class, or play baseball, but on the weekends I would go home. For 4.5 months I did that. The last Sunday in November of 1982, around midnight, I kissed my grandparents goodbye, told them I loved them, I'd be back the next weekend. Had to get back for 8 o'clock a.m. Monday class. Went back to school, got back at 1. At 3, my coach woke me up. He said, you need to go home. Ernest has passed away. You go home, you take care of the funeral, you take care of Alice. She's done enough. Don't worry about your finals. We'll take care of that when you get back. But she doesn't lift another finger. This is your job. And to this day in Brownwood, there's never been a larger funeral take place. People came from all over the country to pay their respects to a man they knew lived for other people. If we all had that on our gravestones, what would that mean for this country? Lived for other people. Those two people saved my life. I drove from Brownwood, Texas to Phoenix, Arizona, and I have to tell you this. I don't push my faith on anybody, but I will tell you this. Because of my grandparents, I've got great faith. And I know this for a fact. I've learned this over the years. God has a sense of humor. At 19, in my little red sports car, on my way from Brownwood to Phoenix for my first spring training to chase my dream, I drove through Big Lake, Texas, and I thought, who would live here? And he remembered that. Because 15 years later, that's where I live. At 24 years of age, I'm in Dr. James Andrews' office in Birmingham, Alabama. Dr. Andrews is one of the top orthopedic surgeons in the world. And I think it's because he practiced on me all the time. Doc Andrews looks at me, he goes, I can fix this and put you back on the field, but son, a decision is yours. What do you want to do? I said, Doc, it's time for me to grow up. If I can't play the game I love, maybe I can teach it. I will go home, I will find a group of kids, I will teach them the exact opposite of what I did, and they'll be pretty good. I want to go to college. I'm going to get a degree. Eventually, I'll meet somebody, get married, start a family, buy a house, get a dog, grow up. That's my plan. He said, that's a great plan. Start with a dog. So after I bought a dog, I went to college. I found out something very important about college you understand much better at 24 than you do when you're 18. If you have to pay for it yourself, you become smart. Those $300 books have words in them. Who knew that? From that point on, things changed for me. All because at 15, my grandparents took me in and turned my life around. Now, years later, I'm finding out that everything I was taught as a youngster in my parents' house was wrong. I'm not dumb. I was athletic my whole life, and now I found out I'm smart. Straight A's, honors fraternity, honors graduate, school was fun. Could do anything I wanted to. Still, I wanted to work with kids. I met my future ex-wife. We got married, moved to Angelo State University, where I punted and kicked for the Angelo State Rams at 27-28. Led the country in punting. Team doctor. Writing a sports book about injuries. Want to talk to me. Now, when you punt and you kick, pretty much you're on the sidelines most of the game. He followed me around every game, pestering me about why I quit playing baseball. You were still young. You were still talented. Why'd you quit? Why'd you walk away? You still could have been playing. Why? Finally, I said, look, I've not thrown a baseball in 3 years. If I roll over on this shoulder in the middle of the night, I can't go back to sleep. That's how bad it hurts. By the end of my second season, as I got ready to graduate, he talked me into having orthoscopic surgery. He said, I'm going to go in and make an incision about that big. I'll see what's there. I'll fix it up. You'll be good as new. If there's anything really wrong, I will wake you up and discuss it with you before I go any further. So after he woke me up, we discussed it. He said, you have a 3.5-inch bone spur growing up the bone in your arm, your humerus. It has a fork in it. One of those prongs inside your rotator cuff had destroyed your shoulder joint completely. I got to reshave the whole joint to make it fit. The other prong has destroyed your deltoid muscle. I got to cut 85% of the muscle out of your shoulder. You will never, ever pitch again. Physically impossible. It can't be done. You have nothing there. I didn't care. I was graduating. It was time to start teaching and coaching. And that's what I did. My high school science classes excelled. My baseball teams won. Eventually, I found myself at Reagan County High School in Big Lake, Texas, where they'd won one game each year for the 3 years before I got there. So the first thing I did as the head coach was I kept that team on the schedule. I'm going to win one game. The second thing I found out was that I had 8 kids come out for baseball. Now, I don't know how much y'all know about baseball, but 8 is not enough. So now that I taught one of the most exciting classes in high school education, physics, I thought, I will offer a free A to anybody who comes out to my team to play baseball. We were so bad, I only had 2 takers. They made straight A's and they could not play baseball. But that gave us 10 kids. And I would love to sit up here and tell you, as a kid who's wanted to play Major League Baseball since he was 5 years old, that I taught these kids about everything having to do with the history of baseball. How it's seen our country through wars, recessions, depressions, civil unrest, and everything else in between. How when the men couldn't play, the women took over and they started their own league. But the first thing these guys had to learn was something my father taught me very well. If you don't respect yourself, you can't respect anybody else. So the first thing we had to learn about was respect. We learned to wear our uniforms correctly. We learned to turn our hats around the way they go. You make 9 or 10 million bucks a year, you wear your hat any way you want to. But on this field, in between these lines, you're going to wear it like I want you to wear it. And we may not be good, but we're going to look good. Third day of practice, I have a dad come up to me and go, my kid did not sign up to pick weeds. So on the fourth day of practice, that dad was picking weeds. And the following after that, we had more dads, and then we had teachers. And then they saw that the climate was changing. We were redoing our baseball field, which was our home, which is where people came to try to beat us. We redid the infield, the outfield, the grass, the dirt, planted trees, batting cages. We were the Reagan County Owls. We painted a big mean-looking owl on the center field fence. Do you know how hard it is to make a mean-looking owl? But these kids respected it because they had done the work themselves. And when you do the work yourself, you respect it a whole lot more than if somebody hands it to you. We went in the classroom. We opened doors for teachers. We said, yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am. We did our homework. We turned our homework in. We otherwise closed our mouths because if we're not learning, we can't dream as big as we can possibly dream. And I am the perfect example. The dream you start chasing may not be the one you end up loving the most. We all think we know what we want. But until we get out there and we live it, we don't really know anything. That first season, those kids won 10 games. We were 10-0 at home. Nobody came on their field and beat them there.
The next year, 63 kids came out for the baseball team, which did not endear Morris to the football coach. But then, the team overheard the school's athletic director denigrating their future prospects, causing morale and their season's win-loss record to plummet. Be sure to join me for the second part of the podcast, episode 157, or what I entitled, Pitching Lessons from Life, The Rookie Speaks To, When Morris goes on to describe how his high school baseball players turned their season around by challenging him with a bet. They told him, if we win the district baseball championship, you find a tryout to pitch at. That's coming up next Tuesday, a day known around these parts as Christmas Eve. Between now and then, please spread the good cheer by telling all your Facebook friends about the terrific WGC-sponsored podcast you listen to and encourage them to subscribe. And while you're at it, like or follow the Washington Grain Commission Facebook page. And then join me on Christmas Eve, ho, 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 for another episode of Weed All About It!
We're all children of a special treat, a miracle of nature that we just call wheat. A crop that's in the Bible, a crop that's in our bread, a crop that's filled our bellies and held us in its head. Through a history of starvation and times of wanting woe, wheat has been our savior, our grub, our glue, our dough. Always lots of problems when we have enough to eat, but there's only one dilemma when it's not enough wheat. We feed you.